It's time for CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, YouTube, and TuneIn. The easiest thing to do is tell Alexa or Siri to play CBJ in 30. Here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
The 20th anniversary season officially got underway last night in Nashville, and the Blue Jackets lost to the Predators by the final score of 3-1. Welcome to CBJ and 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. It was a disappointing loss. Every loss is disappointing, but the Blue Jackets, they hung in there. They played well. I thought Jonas Korpisalo played well. Boone Jenner had the only goal for the Blue Jackets. The only frustrating thing was it was the same things that we've been talking about for weeks. And the problems with the Blue Jackets and scoring is at the top of that list. Finding a way to score. No scoring on the power play in the couple of chances last night. So, again, disappointing, but it is only one out of 56. It doesn't become a real concern still or until you start into a losing streak or you lose four out of five or something like that. So Blue Jackets get a chance to bounce right back tomorrow with the second and final game of this series in Nashville. Right now, I want to tell you about Telhio Credit Union, where they have been putting people over profits since way back in 1934. That's a long time. I mean, we're talking Great Depression time, for crying out loud. That's when they started with the policies that they have today. And that's what has made them so great. And it also brings up this question for you. Why settle for a normal bank when you have a credit union that is going to put you first? What's different about a credit union? If you're going to go to a credit union, why should it be Telhio Credit Union? All of those answers are at your fingertips right now, this very second. Go to their website, telhio.org, surf through it. The answers to your questions are right there. So go with a credit union that's going to put you first. Telhio Credit Union. Again, find them on the web at telhio.org. So the Blue Jackets, again, it was disappointing last night. I mean, I'm watching the game, and I was impressed a little bit in the level of play by both teams. I thought it was going to be a little bit sloppier than it was. I thought both teams played very well. I thought Jonas Korpisalo was good for the Blue Jackets, especially early in the game when he needed to be. And again, they did a lot of things right. They just didn't score goals. Oh, and then, by the way, when they made two mistakes, those two mistakes cost them because they both turned into goals. A couple of two-on-ones turned into goals. The first time, Michael Delzato, they get around him. They turn that into a two-on-one. Luke Cunning scores the goal on that one. And then later, David Savard tries to step up. He misses his man. Then he runs into Cam Atkinson. They both are down and out of the play. Leaves Vladislav Gavrikov back in a two-on-one, and Philip Forsberg scores that goal to make it a 2-1 game in the third period. And then the empty netter was added later by Callie Yarncroak. He was the one that put the empty netter in. And that's how the final score was set in that game. So again, it's only one game. I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to get all, you know, beside myself about it by any means. You're not going to win all 56 games. Nobody here is going 56-0. And as I said, you get a chance to play again tomorrow night. And if you win tomorrow night, then you go to Detroit for two games. And even though those aren't slam dunk wins, they're about as close as you can get to it, the way Detroit is rebuilding. So, you know, you can come out of this trip okay, even if you come out of the trip 2-2, right? So anyway, let's just all take a collective breath. Let's all settle down and let's get ready for tomorrow night's game. And I'm going to help you do that right now. Now, I told you earlier this week, I had former Blue Jackets goaltender for a very short period of time and current NBC sports analyst Brian Boucher lined up for the show today. And that was true. And I had had every indication that he was coming on the show. And last night during the game, he sent me an email, and a situation arose in his life that, and it's not a COVID situation, I'll tell you that right now. Just something happened and he can't be on the show today. Simple as that. He apologized. He said he's going to make it up to you, the audience. So we'll have him on at some point, but it's not happening today. So that happens during the game last night. So now I'm saying to myself, how can I get a real good quality guest that's going to give us a good show, and is going to, you know, help to kind of supplement what we're watching. Cause at the time I'm watching the game as it's going on. And then it hit me and it was a no brainer. And it was right there in front of me, taking on the Nashville Predators. Pete Weber has been the voice of the Predators since their inception in 1998. And he's been around pro sports for a long, long time. He's got great stories. He's got great insight. And so I sent Pete a message and I said, hey, would you be willing to go on with me tomorrow? And I told him he's playing second fiddle to Brian Boucher. And Pete, he's such a pro, he's fine with that. But, you know, I told him I was in a bind and I told him I'd like to talk to him. And graciously, as he does with all things in his life, Pete Weber accepted the invitation. So without further ado, let's bring him on to today's edition of CBJ and 30, the one and the only Pete Weber of the Nashville Predators. Well, Pete, thanks for being on with me today. I appreciate it. Of course, our two teams played each other last night in the very first game of this regular season. Nashville wins it 3-1, empty net goal sealed it at the end for the Predators. What did you think about the game itself? Because I was sitting there and I was watching it, and it's the first game of the season, and it was a very abbreviated training camp. But yet I was saying to myself, this is a pretty good game. I mean, it looks like a regular hockey game. It doesn't look like a sloppy early season game. And that surprised me. Did you feel like that?
Absolutely. That's absolutely what I was anticipating. I thought this was going to be slop upon slop upon slop. And there were guys, and on the Predator side anyway, who weren't able to get in that many practices before all this, or even participate fully in the scrimmages. Duchesne last night, that was really his first full go at things in a while. And I thought he played pretty darn well. But obviously the group that still looks like they have in the past and produced the go-ahead goal, the Jofa line with, your man, Ryan Johansson, along with Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg. Forsberg, to me, looks like he plays like that most of the time. And that, again, he did last night. He essentially created that whole goal. I mean, he did everything you possibly could have done. So, you know, any assists awarded on that were true gifts. It was like the old days of when we all anticipated that, the Boston Bruins, for example. Yeah, he was on the bench. No, actually, he was in the shower, but Phil Esposito still got an assist on Bobby Orr's goal.
You know, when I saw Philip Forsberg score that goal, I don't know why this flashed in my mind, but I still cannot believe the Predators were able to get him in a trade for Martin Erat years ago from the Washington Capitals. I mean, when you go back and you can analyze every trade that's ever been made in the NHL, right? But man, look at that trade. Are you kidding me? That's a no-brainer who got the best deal in that trade.
Yeah, and that was because George McPhee, then the general manager of the Capitals, was feeling pressure to get a veteran to add for their run toward the expected or hoped for cup. And David Poile simply said, you can't have him unless we get Marty Erat. So I believe that came in or got called into central registry about 10 seconds before the expiration time. Okay. They're in the queue and it probably would have been approved anyway, but it wasn't like that old fax problem that allowed Peter Stastny to get traded years ago, maybe 3 hours past the deadline. But that was, you're right. It's no trouble judging the winner of that trade. There are a few others, but I think when you get right down to it, that is, in recent times, probably the best return for the least. And Marty Erat, I still can correspond with him. I think he scored 9 NHL goals after that deal. Yeah. And last night, Forsberg, I think that was his 169th career NHL goal.
Yeah, I think every GM, when they look back on their career, there's going to be trades that there'll be a whole bunch that they won't be remembered whatsoever. And then there'll be like the best one that you ever made and the worst one you ever made. And for George McPhee, that's got to be the worst one, isn't it?
Well, I think that's the one that really made him available. It would be the first general manager of the Vegas Golden Knights. I don't think there's any question on that. I really don't.
Yeah, well, another trade that the Predators made during the offseason paid off last night, too, getting Luke Kunin from the Minnesota Wild in exchange for Nick Bonino. And, of course, Kunin scored the first goal that tied the game at that point. As you've watched him, and you've watched him a lot in the West the last couple of years, and now you're watching him with the Predators, what do you like about Luke Kunin?
He seems to be able to find openings where you don't think any exist. Let's go back to the old days of NFL films where Gale Sayers makes the pronouncement, all I need is 18 inches of daylight and I'm great. Well, That's essentially what he found last night. And the 2-on-1, able to conclude that with the score. And the interesting thing, isn't it, because guys have just gotten together, but who's the man that set that up for him? A former Wild teammate, Eric Howla. And what an airborne backhanded feed that was to him to go down ice and then finish off. And now Howla is another guy I talked to earlier about people who have not had that much time on the ice in this very shortened training camp or preseason period. And he really got on the ice for the Predators for the first time on Sunday night. So that's very little time. And Cunnan, because he was an RFA coming in, got his contract signed and had to quarantine for a while. And he didn't get on the ice until Sunday night in the scrimmage. So I guess this is that great argument. Maybe these training camp things that everybody seems to want to go up to 3 months just to get everybody perfectly ready, maybe they're unnecessary.
Yeah, well, and a guy that would hate that would be John Tortorella, like,
yes,
right? Because his training camp is legendary. You know, the guys didn't have to do his 2 mile run this year. They were ecstatic about that. but you're right. It does make a good point. And even now you look during the regular season, I don't know how it works in Nashville with the coaches that you've had, but, you know, towards practice gets to, it comes to a point where he almost doesn't even practice anymore. He's more interested in giving them the days off. So yeah, there is somewhat of an argument for that, but you know, the game is structured, but then again, there's a lot of pond hockey today too.
Oh yeah, there certainly is. And I think I've seen that in the little glimpses I have seen the first two nights of the season for the games in the so-called Scotiabank Northern Division, the Canadian division. I tell you one thing, if you are raising a goaltender, don't let one of those sons end up with one of those teams up there. I think they, is a formula, they're all supposed to be 9 goal total games. I mean, that's what it appears to be so far.
Well, it's funny you say that, because one of the things I've been harping on for the last 2 weeks is skaters can go out and skate and they can shoot, but the goalies aren't really getting what they're going to get during the regular season. So, you know, I said games might be 7-6 early on. And then I'm watching that game that our teams played against each other last night. And I'm like, well, this is a March game. This is not a early in the season game here. And I guess that's a credit to the goaltenders on both sides. And, you know, speaking of that, it's really interesting. These two teams both are going to operate with a goaltending tandem this year, but it's different because the Blue Jackets have two young guys, each one trying to win a long-term job here. And for the Predators, of course, you've got the veteran Pecorine, who's now on the downside, and he's good with that. And UC Saros, who played really well last night and made big saves when he had to.
But the biggest save might have been made by Matthias Ekholm.
Yes, it was. You're right. You're exactly right. He did get into position to make that save. But what do you like about those two guys and just the way they interact? It seems like there's an understanding between the two.
There is an understanding between the two, and it's looked upon maybe not so much mentor and mentee or a teacher student, but countrymen, and one looking out for the other. Pekka, really, from the very outset, he took Jussi under his wing and I think helped make him comfortable in the NHL. Now, they're divergently different goaltending styles. Because of size differential, Saros has to be much more compact in what he does, and he has been. And Pekka is the guy. Now, I worked with and around Dominik Kashuk for several years, and nobody can be as unorthodox as he. But there's some element of that in Pekka's game on occasion. Now, the one thing that Dominik always did was he would throw away a stick as if it was just an unneeded encumbrance for him and pick up the puck with his blocker glove hand. So goaltending has really morphed over the years from the time when guys with their entire career facing all those shots without a mask to that period of time in the mid-90s where, what was it, Ted Nolan referred to Garth Snow as the Michelin man in goal with all the padding, to now it's been somewhat reduced by regulation. But I think, and if you look at video from the 70s and 80s, the goaltenders back then looked to be almost naked compared to the goalies of today, or certainly of the mid-90s. But they are so much more athletic as a general rule than ever they were before.
Yeah, you look at those old, you know, when they played the stand-up style and those guys just, they almost didn't look like athletes in some ways. You're right.
Correct.
Now it is, without question, the most athletic-looking guy on the ice. is the goaltender. And who would have known that Dominic was so ahead of his time in getting rid of the stick? Because, you know, it used to be if the goaltender lost his stick, the defenseman hands him a stick. These guys don't even want it now.
Correct.
They practice standing in net and making the saves without the stick. They're not worried about it anymore. So Hasek was, that's how good he was, Pete. He was way ahead of his time.
Very much ahead of his time. Excuse me. I'll never forget the night with Edmonton coming into the yard in Buffalo, and Doug Weight breaks in all alone. Hasek already, I think, was in the process of having lost his stick. He got down on the ice in a snow angel, and he made a melon save on Doug Weight off his helmet, and he was fully intended to do that. It wasn't as if that was his last resort entirely, but that's what he wanted to do. And I think from that point onward, he was really the goaltender who got into the heads of the other teams, maybe more than anybody else.
Yeah, pardon the pun, got into the heads, right?
Yes, exactly.
Let me ask you what your opinion is on the way the NHL is set up this year. Of course, the Blue Jackets and the Predators are going to play again tomorrow night in the second game of their two-game series. That is going to be commonplace this year. Most times you play somebody, it'll be in back-to-back games. You're like me. You've got a baseball background to you. I kind of like this. I really wish we were traveling, because you can go into a city and settle in for a couple of days instead of being in and out within a matter of hours. But how do you think this is going to set up? You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's going to create animosity. The teams are going to be sick of playing against each other, and it'll get back. It'll lean toward old time hockey. I'm just not so sure of that, because I don't know if today's player has that same type of mentality. I mean, yeah, they're going to get agitated. They'll get sick and tired of playing against other guys, but I don't know if that'll morph into, you know, 2-3 fights a game or anything like that. But what do you think about the way this schedule is set up? Do you like this format?
Well, I think, number one, it makes great sense going through this COVID pandemic, because it restricts the amount of miles teams have to travel. And we're restricted anyway with our division, though, with the Florida teams, that maybe adds a little bit more mileage than we might ordinarily have. But I remember I was, I earned my gray hair because I was working with the Los Angeles Kings back in the late 70s, early 80s, when the WHA merged with the NHL. And all of a sudden, and we were traveling commercially, I remember jumping on the same flight with the Edmonton Oilers. We were playing a home and home, the same commercial flight to fly up to Edmonton after playing in Los Angeles on a Saturday before a Sunday game. And it was at that point in time, it was not Skyreach Center, but its earlier incarnation as a name. But then you come into what's going on now, and to play two-game series. So Winnipeg was always a two-game series from that time forward, especially when the West Coast teams went up there to play. I just think it makes sense. Number one, I don't think anybody in the financial offices of any of these teams think it's wise to make four trips into a city when you can cut it down to two, be much more economical on the usage of your resources, and then get these games in. And is it going to be like old time hockey? Are we getting back to the days of the original six, when you played every other team 14 times and it seemed like every other weekend it was Blackhawks Canadians, and you know, it was Bruins Rangers. So they don't have to worry about that necessarily, because to what you cited, the mentality of today's player. Maybe this scheduling will change that later on, but that's just something we have to wait and see. But I think economically, and to cut down the travel, I think it's going to help actually a great deal. And I wouldn't be surprised if, when normalcy returns, they might be thinking about what happened this season and maybe try to incorporate that.
I hope they're thinking about taking Seattle and sticking them in that Canadian division and keeping things the way they are. I like this setup. I really do. And for the Blue Jackets, it brings you back to your roots when you first started in the league, right? With the Red Wings and the Predators and the Blackhawks. And then it mixes in the Florida teams. And okay, Pete, I'm being selfish, because once travel returns, we get to go to Florida more than we do now. Yeah. That would be great. But seriously,
I thought you were going to tell me Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
But just the setup to it is, look, I have no problem with the Buffalo Sabres taking the Blue Jacket spot in the Metro Division, because that's a tough division. Let them deal with that. Let them try to figure out how to get the personnel to compete over there. But I do like this, and it makes a lot of sense. And like I said, you know, for our franchise, it brings us back to where we were when it all began.
What was it like when there were only reports of what the divisions were going to be? What was it like there in Columbus when it appeared it was going to be Pittsburgh in with what has turned out to be the Central Division now? And St. Louis and Minnesota were suddenly dealt out. It looked like Dallas was going to go back to playing a West Coast schedule as they had. So there was a lot of, various scenarios being considered. I'm with you. I like this division.
Look, the Pittsburgh has become a rival. I still think Pittsburgh is a rival in Columbus. People in Pittsburgh don't look at Columbus as a rival, and that's just because you haven't had enough wins against them in the playoffs yet for that to happen. That's just honest. But
yeah,
I don't know. I didn't hear a lot of buzz about it and how big a deal it was not to be in with the Penguins. And I'll tell you this, and I don't have to tell you this. You've been around long enough to know. There is no way that the Flyers and the Penguins are going to play in a separate division. There is just no way. I mean, that old Patrick division with the New York teams and the Flyers and the Penguins and the Capitals, in my opinion, that was never going to happen. They were never going to pull those apart. And, of course, they didn't.
Why don't they rename that division the bus division? Because those clubs are so close and clustered
together. Or the train division anyway.
Yeah, the train division. Yeah. Very well could be.
Yeah. So, I agree with you. I like this. It'll be interesting to see. And look, where the Red Wings are, where the Blackhawks are right now, nothing's a guaranteed win in the NHL. But, at least going into it, there are certain teams that you have to focus on, I would think. And four are going to make the playoffs. And I think teams like Nashville and Columbus feel pretty good about that.
Yes, I think they have to. And I think that the way things will play out is going to be, we're going to test everybody's taxi squad, right? Because these games all bunch together. What is it, 115 days, 116 days, and 56 games? Not much recovery time for whatever injuries might occur, or for the, I'm going to knock on Formica here hope it's not, COVID situations that mess things up.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Hey, the coaching situation in Nashville was stable for so very long with Barry Trotz there. And then once Barry went out, and then all of a sudden you got Peter Laviolette there for a while. Now John Hines is in there as the head coach. What's it been like for you? I mean, you've been there since the beginning, and you and Barry Trotz were together for so long. And now all of a sudden you've had to deal with a couple different guys in a shorter period of time.
Yes. And here's the other thing. Nashville and pro sports, the NFL came here the same year the Predators started in 1998. Think how these fans here in Middle Tennessee thought coaches lasted almost a lifetime here. Barry Trotz left after 2014. Jeff Fisher lasted only slightly less long. And really, when you consider the fact that he had started with the team in Houston as a head coach in 95, it was like, not realizing what the shelf life of some coaches might be. Even when a guy thought he was stable in Philadelphia with the Eagles, things get changed up. So this, the changeover, I mean, it was the Winter Classic in Dallas, and go down and have a 2-0 lead and lose 4-2 to the Stars, then go out west immediately after that and win a game in Los Angeles, but lose a tight one in Anaheim. And on the flight home, evidently, and I still don't have confirmation on this, word got to Peter Laviolette that he was done, because he did something at that point in time that he had never done. He went back in the plane to talk in the player section with some of the guys. And so when we get off, word had kind of spread that he was being replaced. We didn't know yet for sure who it was that was going to replace him, but the next day it was announced that it was going to be John Hines. And John Hines, of course, had the great assignment of facing the Boston Bruins in his first game. And he had a morning skate, but not a practice before that to meet with his team. But I think he did a pretty good job of cleaning up some defensive zone problems that the team had, trying to play man-to-man, and then he switched things back over to zone. And I think that settled things down there a great deal. And we saw the number of high opportunity chances on the goalies diminish greatly.
Yeah, that's funny how things work in this sport, right? I mean, sometimes just the subtlest change makes such a difference. And John Hines, how much of him coming there has to do with USA Hockey? And of course, David Poile is very much into USA Hockey. Was there a tie there between those guys?
A little bit there, but I think the thing that worked most in John's favor was David's relationship with Ray Sherrill and Tom Fitzgerald, both of whom recommended John very highly. And so they come in here, and it was a, I think, obviously, you don't just make a coaching change. You wake up one morning, got to change the coach. So I'll call two buddies. I'm sure there was some sort of process going into all of that that resulted in that move toward John Hines being made. And I'm just thankful we didn't have the pandemic going on then. Could you imagine how long, if you're making a change like that, for example, the new coach would have to be quarantined coming in? I mean, our thought processes have changed greatly because
that,
of this.
That's funny you say that, because I never even thought about that. I mean, you know, this league is notorious for making changes mid-season. I wonder if that will curtail any potential changes in that position.
It might well. I mean, now, unless a Northern Division team wants to bring Dave King, an ex-Blue Jackets coach, in, at least he's already up there. So wouldn't have to worry about that. But, yeah, those are considerations that have to be made. And I was wondering as well, the waiver acquisition the other day of Lucas Pisa from Winnipeg. And when he gets there, he's going to have to quarantine for a while. And what about trades from the Northern Division as we come to the trade deadline? Are you going to be as eager, if you're south of the border, to pick up a player from one of those teams?
Great, great questions. You know, in all the years you've been around sports, and again, the NHL, the NFL, you've been around baseball, is this the strangest thing that you've had to endure, just overall, this whole pandemic and what we've gone through for 10 months?
The only thing that approaches it was my first year doing baseball every day in 1981, the year of the big league strike. So I was with an Albuquerque team that was just magnificently staffed. They went 93-38 in the regular season. But you knew that even though the Dodgers that year, who ultimately would go on to win the World Series, were not going to be making any roster changes, calling the guys up who were hot. Mike Marshall was in the process of winning the Triple Crown at first base. We had the former Rookie of the Year, Rudy Law, in center field. You can imagine they would have wanted to have him up if they had any problem at all in the outfield. Candy Maldonado in right field. But I think the key to that was a relief pitcher named Alejandro Pena, who was, he didn't speak much English then. I was able to teach him a few English phrases to use in good situations, but he was reading all about Fernando Mania, and he was going out on his own early in the day to try to throw a screwball against the outfield fence. And when manager Del Crandall saw that, he went out there and said, "Son, you're going to get to the big leagues on what you have now. Let's not risk ruining your arm because of that." So that was the craziest scenario I had faced before this year.
Wow. Those are some great names. I mean, well, I guess when you've done what you've done in your life, you've got some great names in that vocabulary of yours.
Well, Del Crandall was he was the manager who was my first, he became a broadcast partner for me because he got into a scrap with the Phoenix Giants, and both he and manager Rocky Bridges, who I later would have in Buffalo, were suspended by the league for 5 games. So Dell became my color man.
Of all the athletes that you've worked around, can you narrow it down to one guy who was the most interesting or most fun, or just, you know, somebody that stands out above the rest? Because I know it's a huge pool of people, and I was going to say, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I guess I do mean to, because I'm asking you this. But, you know, of all the people that you've been around, who jumps out at you the most?
Marcel Dion, who was with my first big league team. He came up, introduced himself to me, sat down, said, "Anything you need, you just talk to me." And matter of fact, we were texting and cell phoning just a little bit before the resumption here, before we knew training camps were getting started. Because then where did he end up? He ends up outside Buffalo on the Ontario side. But he's inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Claudia and I drive up from Buffalo to Toronto when it was still being held in Thompson Hall before they had made the move of the Hall of Fame. And he said, "Your wife is here. Come on into the party." So it was the best conversation was Claudia, me, Marcel Dion, Dave Taylor, and some guy named William Scott Bowman, who came over and just wanted to shoot the bull. And boy, there shouldn't have been any bulls alive after we finished.
You know, you mentioned your wife, Claudia. And one thing that I really like the most about you is how close you are with your wife. And I know you do a lot of traveling. I've seen you in different parts of the country at different times of the year with your wife along with you. And she's got a Columbus connection.
Well, yeah, she essentially was brought up there. And she went to Bishop Hartley High School. She went to Ohio State. And do you want another name to tie in here?
Sure.
We're at a charity dinner in Buffalo, a fundraiser for Children's Hospital that we were doing with the Buffalo Bills Women's Club. At our table was one Orenthal James Simpson. O.J. Simpson was sitting at our table. And he looks across at Claudia and goes, "Is that an Ohio State ring you have on there?" She goes, "Well, yes, O.J. Remember the year you won the Heisman Trophy and we beat you in the Rose Bowl?" I mean, but you see, O.J. had a sports bar in Buffalo where I did a weekly sports talk show. So we were accustomed, and I've still got a memorable post-AFC championship game interview with him when the Bills beat the Raiders 51-3 to go to their first Super Bowl. And O.J. clearly was the star of that.
You know, another thing about you, Pete, and as I said earlier, you've been in Nashville ever since it began there. But I spent those 10 years in Syracuse doing baseball and hockey. And I know that every time I go to Buffalo, there are few names more revered in the broadcasting industry in Buffalo than the name of Pete Weber. And I know you still have a very close I think in some ways you're probably still more popular in Buffalo than you are in Nashville. And that would be crazy to even think. But they just love you there. What are you in? You're in the Baseball Hall of Fame there, right?
Yeah. Went in there. Actually, my first summer here, they called me back to go into that. But I tell you, that was the town where I was able to hone every skill I use today because I did so many different things. I cobbled together so many freelance gigs at the start. And then in 83, I signed on with Bison Baseball and stayed with them on an everyday basis through 1995, then went to the Empire Sports Network and worked there until this opening came up for me here in 1998. So I crossed a lot of others' lives there, and I hope I, positively affected some of those because I had a great deal of fun, and I'm still, I'm conflicted tomorrow night. You know what goes on the same time as Predators Blue Jackets?
Bills?
Yes. So the three DVRs will be spinning here at the house, and right after the game, I'll be hustling back to watch that.
Oh, that's great. And it's great that you still feel that way about that city. And, I guess when you've taken those treks like we have, and of course yours is on a higher level on the way to where you are now than mine was, but you really do find that appreciation for those places that allowed you to become who you are, don't you?
Yeah. And the same actually for me are much the same, but it was a briefer period of time. I put in about 20 years in Buffalo, but 3 years in Los Angeles. But the guys, the off-ice officials there, Bob Miller there. I mean, Nick Nixon, who took my place when I left to go to the Seattle Supersonics. We are all together. Jimmy Fox, who was a player when I was there. We still tell old stories, mostly about our old general manager, George McGuire, who was as crusty a guy as I ever have run into in my life in any endeavor. As a matter of fact, the forum portrait of George McGuire is in my room next door here to my office because we had such a wonderful relationship.
How many guys?
I'm sorry. I got to take my tongue out of my cheek.
Perfect. I was sitting here thinking when you're talking about, a manager that became a broadcast partner. And I know, you're talking about Jim Fox. He's now an analyst. How many guys did you work with, whether they be former players or whether they be broadcasters? How many guys have you worked with that are now in the major leagues and are doing a job? They're working with a team. They have their own team that they're working for. Or they're doing network or whatever, because I can imagine that list is probably long.
Well, off the top of my head, Greg Brown, the voice of the Pirates now, is with me in Buffalo working both Bison games and Buffalo Bills games. So when we share, Marv Levy stories, we both can smile about those. Marv is still, and we're not traveling this year, but when I would go to Chicago, I always was getting in touch with him. And literally know how the worlds cross over. Marv Levy is a great friend of Ryan Sandberg. How? When Marv was with the Chicago Blitz of the USFL, that was when Ryan was having his MVP season for the Chicago Cubs. So they get together as great friends, and they are co-owners. There are some other partners of Harry Carey's restaurants in Chicago. So that's just fascinating to me. And then I saw Ryan Sandberg when he came and was a manager at the AAA All-Star Game reunion in Buffalo. Okay, so that would have been in 2013. And he was, he tells great Marv stories, and most people do. But, you know, Marv took over for Hank Bulla as coach of the Bills. The team really ran for the bus one afternoon in Tampa Bay to get rid of Hank Bulla. And then that forces Bill Polian to bring in his old Chicago Blitz buddy, Marv Levy, as head coach. And boy, what a story that turned out to be.
Wow. Yeah. What a legendary coach. Do you still have the relationships with coaches and players today that you did back in the day, or how different is that now?
Well, if we continue along these ways in the pandemic, I probably won't.
Right.
But yes, I do. Yes, I maintain those relationships. And I think that one of the best I have in baseball really is Terry Collins, who was our manager in Buffalo for 3 years. And a few years ago, I went to the then almost brand new Citi Field just to renew acquaintance. And the stories we told, we probably should have been arrested. And I know the New York media probably wished that too, because that's all we were doing in the room with this pregame availability one day.
All right, I'm going to ask you about one more guy that you have crossed paths with. And I'm going to ask you about that because he's now a Blue Jacket, and we saw him make his Blue Jackets debut last night. And that's defenseman Michael Delzato, who spent a little bit of time in Nashville with you. And I understand is still a guy that you've stayed in touch with, even after he moved on and bounced around the league a little bit.
And it wasn't so much me reaching out. It was he in St. Louis last year. He was scratched for a game, and he made sure to come up to the press box. And, you know, here we are again. I hate to say this. If PETA is part of your listenership, on this podcast, we were shooting bulls again, right? And so when the trade was made for him with the Rangers, and I loved your stories with John Tortorella on your previous podcast talking about young Michael Delzato and seeing how he is now matured, but he is a kid that the Predators got because they wanted to balance right and left, and it was very interesting to me because Delzato plays either side very well. But they wanted to get a left side defenseman because they had an overabundance. Can you imagine NHL club saying this? An overabundance of right shooting defensemen. So Kevin Klein goes to the New York Rangers. Michael Delzato now is still playing. Kevin Klein retired, a year before last. So that was intriguing. But Delzato, a good friend, trying to remember which member it is of the NHL radio staff in Toronto, but they grew up together in Stouffville, Ontario. And I would be getting calls saying, please say hello to Michael Delzato. And maybe that's what truly connected us.
I was just sitting here thinking when you were telling that story about him searching you out, I think one of the greatest honors as a broadcaster is when a former player that you've worked with searches you out just to say hello to you. And it happened to me last year in Toronto. We had a guy named Ryan Caldwell who played in Syracuse, and I haven't seen this guy in more than a decade, because I've been here in Columbus. And he had just gotten a job as a scout with the Winnipeg Jets, and he came to find me and just to say hello after all of those years. And, you know, I take that as, I don't know how you feel about it, but that's what makes me feel good about what I do, that that those players, even when they move on, they still look at you as somebody that was fair, somebody that, you know, was a friend to them when you worked together, wherever that was. And to me, that's one of the most special things about the game, whatever the game is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a guy that probably, as I utter his name, I don't know if it's a curse word at Columbus or not, but Matt Barnaby is like that with me too. So I hear from him quite a bit. And it's still hard for me to think about Matthew Barnaby Jr. Playing the game now at Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and his dad tweets about him a lot, so that's good.
Yes,
right?
He does. And, of course, there was people in Columbus probably figure that Matt Barnaby Sr. should be in State Penn rather than his son playing at Penn State.
We got to end on that. I mean, that's a high note. speaking of that, you have the high note now in Nashville and Todd Richards. So you got the former
the
head coach.
The cross-pollination is amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's crazy. It's crazy. And there's still seven games left between the two teams this year.
Right.
And that doesn't even count if both of them would make the playoffs, and maybe there's more. So
one other theme to keep in mind, though, Bob, and I hate to prolong this for you, but it appears a pattern has developed. When the Washington Capitals are going to hire another head coach, they want one who would coach the Predators.
Yeah.
Barry Trotz and now Peter Laviolette. Is that the formula in Washington?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure we're going to find out, because that's the way that's the way the coaching carousel goes in the National Hockey League.
Pete, it
it's so great to talk to you. I appreciate it. We've actually talked a couple of times this week leading up to the first game, and now to have this conversation is great. I miss you, buddy. I wish I was in Nashville and I could see you face to face. I wish you were coming to Columbus this year, but hopefully we'll cross our fingers and hope that's back to normal in October.
Yeah, we got it. We got to hope for that, and maybe there will put a Peloton in your hotel room too.
It would just gather dust, man. Torts will ride his Peloton in his room, and I would actually social media video would be good with that, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? I mean, you talk about viral.
I wonder if it's one of those ones that has a screen on it where the person talks back to you, because I would love to hear what Torts would have to say to that person.
Or if he could wire it, if you will, if that's the right terminology, whereby you conduct your interview with him coming at him through that feed.
Yeah. All he's got to do is put his phone up there somewhere.
Yeah.
It'd be very easy. Maybe I'll talk to him about that, but it's not going to be after a loss. I'll tell you that right now.
No, but tell him I suggested it.
I will tell him that you suggested it.
Yes.
I'll tell him. I'm going to talk to him on Sunday evening, and I'm going to tell him right away. Next time you go to Nashville, Pete Weber said, you got to mount that phone and do the interview while you're on the bike.
Yeah. And that's what I want, because one of my all time great talk show interviews was with the late coach of the Tennessee Lady Vols, Pat Summitt.
Yeah.
And we're going, Pat, you seem short of breath. Oh, I'm doing the Stairmaster now.
Well, tell you what, that's kind of the way she lived her life, right?
Yes, it was. But there's your setup for the interview with Torts. You tell Torts that Pat Summitt did a radio interview while on her Stairmaster. I think that's entree. He's going to want to do that, because the Peloton should be even more challenging.
Listen, I know you've known Torts for a while, but I've worked with him for 6 years. I know what he's going to say, and I'm not going to be able to put it on the air. But I'm still going to tell him every
Please
word
do.
Of what you just said. All right?
Please do.
Thank you, Pete. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon, my friend.
You got it.
I never tire of hearing Pete's stories. I don't. I think they're great, and there's so many more of them. We could do like a 12-hour podcast just talking with Pete Weber and getting his stories on old-time hockey, old-time baseball, old-time NFL football. It doesn't matter. You heard all of it, or you heard a lot of it right there. So it's always great to have Pete on. And again, I am very grateful that he took the time to join us, all of us, here today on CBJ and 30. Well, Pete will be back behind the microphone for Nashville tomorrow night, and I'll be behind the microphone for the Blue Jackets tomorrow night as the two-game series wraps up in Nashville. That's an 8:00 start. So once again, our pregame coverage will begin at 7:30 on the Blue Jackets radio network. And that includes a flagship station in Columbus, 97.1, The Fan. What will each team do with goaltenders? I wouldn't be shocked if you see the other goaltender for each team in the game. Again, the goaltenders were not the problem. Corposalo played well in a loss. UC Saros played well in a win. But you've got Pekka Rinne sitting on the other side. You've got Elvis Merzlikin sitting on the Blue Jackets side. So it wouldn't shock me. You know, John Tortorella said in the pregame interview yesterday that he plans on alternating the goalies early on and then seeing where it goes from there. So I'm not guaranteeing you that Elvis is starting at this point in time right now. And as I do this for you, the Blue Jackets haven't practiced today. There's been no media availability and none of that stuff. So, you know, I'm spitballing, as they say. I'm going by what the coach said. Don't be surprised if Elvis is the starter tomorrow night in Nashville. But scoring, got to find some scoring. And where is it going to come from? That top line of the Blue Jackets that looked so good during this training camp and scrimmage games. And I told you, scrimmage games is one thing. Real games are another thing. They had some chances. They couldn't bury those chances. I didn't think they looked bad. I thought Bjorkstrand had some good looks. And Grigorenko had a great look at one point in time. And his shot either missed the net or got deflected, whatever. But anyway, it'll come. And that's just the bottom line. Okay. So hopefully it comes tomorrow night. Blue Jackets and Predators, game two of their series before the Blue Jackets move on to Detroit to take on the Red Wings for a couple of days. 8 o'clock is when the puck drops in Nashville. Pregame coverage again starts at 7:30, both on Fox Sports Ohio and on the Blue Jackets radio network. Thanks once again to Pete Weber of the Predators for joining me today. That's going to do it for this edition of CBJ and 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until next time, which by the way is Monday mailbag edition. Don't forget, send me your questions. You can send them to me on Twitter at Bobby Mac Sports. You can do that. You can grab your phone. It's as simple as this. Grab your phone. There's a voice memo. You will find a voice memo option on here. Ask your question right into your phone. Give me your name, where you're from, and your question. Record it as a video. Doesn't matter. And your voice and or your face can be on the show on Monday. Monday mailbag. Don't forget. So send those questions to me ASAP. Okay? Don't wait. Don't let somebody else beat you up. Because if I get a whole bunch and I have to start eliminating, I'm going to go to the ones that came in first. So don't forget that. All right? Now, let me go back to where I was. That'll do it for today's edition of CBJ and 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until next time, I'm Bob McElligan saying so long.